Hi, everyone. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And welcome to the A Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies that they love and the traces of the one reality that lies beneath.
That's right. That is what we do here. And we're on episode number 22. We've been doing this all year long. It's fantastic.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and today we're going to talk about The Social Network, a film by Aaron Sorkin.
So it is The Social Network and not, yeah. I think it would be better if it was Social Network.
The Social Network, right. Yeah. That's good. That's a really good point. I'll pass that
really
on to him.
I wasn't sure.
But yeah, I'm checking it right now. It does say The Social Network.
Okay.
And that's funny because one of the characters in there changed Facebook to just Facebook.
And that's his. Well, I guess that's talk about a spoiler, but yeah, his one contribution.
His one contribution. I think this is a spoiler-free movie, myself.
Yeah, I have to agree because because it's essentially the story, supposedly, of Mark Zuckerberg and how he created Facebook and the people who were upset along the way who came back to sue him and through the flashbacks and current lawsuits, because he's has two of them going on at the same time against him. Yep. You see the story unroll of how the idea came up, how it was developed, his relationships with the people who are suing him, and insights into his character, which and he is brilliantly played, I believe, by Jesse Eisenberg, who this movie and the audiobook White Cat, which I reviewed for SFF Audio, were the two things where I just went, okay, that's it. He's brilliant.
Oh, that's cool. So he's a good narrator.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is. He does kind of the same thing he does in this movie where it doesn't seem like he's changing his tone or what he does much, but he does it very subtly. And so suddenly you really get what's going on. And he had to do that for Mark Zuckerberg because a lot of the times Mark Zuckerberg was talking about one thing but reacting to something else altogether, and it would just be from a glance he gave or the change of his face or something else that you would get what was going on.
Right. Yeah.
Don't you think?
I do think so. And I wonder, now this is a movie based on, you know, real people, obviously. You know, Mark Zuckerberg is a real person who invented Facebook. Okay. But I was wondering, we ought to talk just briefly about the fact that Zuckerberg and other people that are in the movie are claiming that this is not an accurate movie.
Right.
So I was wondering, first of all, does it matter? Surely it matters to Zuckerberg. I'm not sure what he's objecting to or what in there he thinks is not correct. But I've got a little quote here. When asked what the film got wrong, this is what Zuckerberg had to say. He says, "Where do you want to start? I mean, I don't know. It's interesting what stuff they focused on getting right. Like every single fleece and shirt I had in that movie is actually a shirt or fleece that I own." You know, so there's all this stuff that they got wrong and a bunch of random details they got right. The thing that I think is actually most thematically interesting that they got wrong is the whole framing of the movie. Kind of the way that it starts is I'm with this girl that doesn't exist in real life who dumps me, which has happened to me in real life a lot. And basically to frame it as if the whole reason for making Facebook and building something was because I wanted to get girls or wanted to get into some sort of social institution. And the reality for people who know me is that I've actually been dating the same girl since before I started Facebook. So obviously that's not a part of it. But I think it's such a big disconnect from the way people who make movies think about what we do in Silicon Valley, building stuff. They just can't wrap their head around the idea that someone might build something because they like building things.
And that's what would people do with Steve Jobs' life now?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it could be, now that we know about he's dead and we know all about his him being adopted and reconnecting with his sister, but not connecting with his father, who does seem like, I think I could understand that.
Yeah.
you go, would they frame it all around that? But surely those things might have something to do with it, even if he didn't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I would say, the first time, it matters and it doesn't matter. Because for me, the first time I watched it, we instantly came away, and any movie that Tom loves, that's here comes Wikipedia and IMDb and everything else to see what's true and what's not that we can figure out. And we came across those same quotes, and also ones by his friend Eduardo, I can't remember his last name.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Who was saying, wow, that's not how it happened, but it was a great story. And we came away, though, feeling like, wow, we do understand something about how Facebook was developed and who the person was who developed it.
Mm-hmm.
So it matters in that everybody who watches the movie once, and that's probably just most people, I would say,
mm-hmm.
and people who don't care about looking things up, again, most people are going to go, that's the story. We've run into that with things like the Da Vinci Code, right?
Right, right.
In the Catholic Church, they all read that book and go, OMG, mm-hmm. your church is the worst and your Pope even worse, you know, kind of thing. But when I watched it a second time, because I was watching it for this, I didn't care that it was about Mark Zuckerberg, because I was looking at it as what an interesting story, and how Aaron Sorkin and the director, who is well known too, I think, but David Fincher, told the story, brilliantly told, because it's a commentary on social media and how it's used by people.
Right. We had a brief discussion the other day, and when you said that, I said, oh, you know, that kind of clicks and makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I just feel a little ambivalent about, you know, hey, this is about real people that are out there, and I have an impression about Mark Zuckerberg that might not be correct.
Yeah.
That does bother me a little bit.
Yeah. I have to say, because every time I see Mark Zuckerberg wearing his stupid looking, I'm sorry, have to say it like that, t-shirt at a corporate meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, you're just reinforcing that. You know, if all you did was get a real haircut and put on a suit and tie every so often, or even adopt something that's not quite so little kid looking, college kid looking, like, you know, Steve Jobs' black turtlenecks or whatever.
Right.
Just up it a notch.
That
would, in a lot of people's mind, it's such a small thing, but it would help divorce that impression. Now, that doesn't mean he has to do that. I'm just saying they got that other part right, so people are just going to assume that that's correct.
Yeah.
And Aaron Sorkin all along just said it's a story. And it was interesting because The Good Wife, which is excellent if you haven't watched it, but you'd have to begin at the beginning because it's got this huge story arc. But they like to do ripped from the headline things. Like, they just had one a couple weeks ago about Listeria. Mm-hmm. And we all knew what it was because there'd been a Listeria outbreak. But they had one a season or two ago about a Mark Zuckerberg-type character who was trying to get people to admit that the movie wasn't about him.
Hmm.
And they wound up having to come down to suing the screenwriter to get him to admit, at least in the deposition, that, but I made it up. Or what, I can't remember what they were trying to get him to admit, but something so that this guy could get a settlement to show that, you know, it wasn't accurate about his life.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Because everyone is judging him based on it. And I thought, well, that's probably actually fair. We saw that right around the time we saw the movie.
Yeah. That's interesting. But, that's really interesting. Yeah, I'd like to see that episode. As I was watching the movie this second time, I had that in mind. Because when I watched it the first time, I was not aware that there was kind of a, you know, I call it a controversy, but it wasn't like a big controversy, but that, you know, the people that were in it were saying, you know, that's really not at all what happened, you know, and I'm sure, you know, and it does put pretty much every character in this movie in a negative light. I mean, there's not really a lot
Eduardo.
Of good. Yeah. Eduardo. Yeah. You're right.
He's the conscience.
He is the conscience of the movie. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're right on that. But, you know, almost everybody else. I mean, the movie is about these people that are behaving badly, and then, you know, greed comes in and they're all fighting over a piece of this pie. But
Yeah.
You know, I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of greed and stuff. So it's about people behaving badly, really.
But
the main thing is about the social networking, which is why I wanted to talk about it, because when I first watched it, I just kept thinking about the movie. I couldn't stop thinking about it. So I said, let's put this on a good story, and what I was thinking about is, first of all, is, you know, do we need to get into more details about the movie? Maybe not.
Oh, yeah, because there are probably people who actually haven't watched it because they're, right. In fact, I ran into a couple people in person who were like, I haven't watched it because I kind of know what it's like and I don't really care about watching that, which is actually how I felt before I ever watched it.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is not going in the pool room because it kind of is that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it should be watched once because, for one thing, it is wonderfully made, which I already knew just from watching it. But then you sit there and watch it for that second time with Rose, the film student who's watched it twice already. Mm-hmm. It's like hearing a running monologue of movie making and storytelling pointed out to you. And it's amazing when you look at the editing, the framing, the shots, the way it's cut together. I mean, it's truly a masterwork that way.
Yeah. And it is a good movie. I thought it was a very good movie.
And whether it grabs you for later or not, it's a very good movie. And it says a lot about human nature, I think.
Yeah. More than anything. I think that's the main thing for me is it said a lot about human nature. I was watching that. I mean, it felt genuine to me. You know, the characters and all that. It's about Mark Zuckerberg, who starts the story he's at Harvard. And Zuckerberg mentioned in that quote, the movie has him breaking up with this girl in a kind of a public restaurant. He has a few beers and decides, as a drunk person, that he's going to make a website where people can compare women together. And he's very angry.
The internet's a bad place to act out, but he does it.
Yeah, he does it. And he does a blog post that's just horrific about this girl. So then he spends the night coding, and sometime in the middle of the night he kicks on this website which has a whole bunch of photographs of these women, and people start to get on the website, and they, you know, you can pick which one's your favorite. And anyway, so a lot of people get on there and do that.
Like 250,000?
Yeah, something like that.
Brings down Harvard's network.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So that's noticed by some people. Not only the people who, you know, want to punish him for it, but also some people who have this idea that they want to make a site where people can connect. One of the interesting things that I wanted to bring about the idea was when one of them said, hey, we want to bring the college experience online.
Yeah.
That was like the original idea.
Right.
So we'll get back to that later. So these guys, I don't remember what their name is. They're twins.
Winklevoss.
Winklevoss, right.
The Winklevoss twins.
The Winklevoss twins, yes. And were those played by actual twins, or was that one guy?
No, that was the one thing where I had to tell Rose, stop it. You're ruining the movie. Where it was, they shot one guy doing it. Although when there were scenes together, there were two people and they like put the guy's face on him. And I'm like, they couldn't have done the old way and had him do all the stuff. But no, whatever.
Gotcha. So
that was CGI-ish.
Yeah. Well, it was very well done.
Yes, it was.
These guys, they're rich Harvard guys and they have this idea for a website. I think they called it Harvard Connection or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they know that Zuckerberg is a good coder, so they bring this idea to him, and they say, hey, would you get with us and do this? Now, Zuckerberg, at that point, he's offended by one thing that they say, which, again, is in that quote, that Zuckerberg quote, is they said that he needed to be exonerated. His name needed to be exonerated for what he did.
Right.
And he is so offended by that it becomes almost a vendetta for him to just build this in spite of them. So he takes the genesis of the idea that they had and he makes his own site and he calls it the Facebook. and kicks it online. And at the beginning, it's only for Harvard students. And of course, these guys get upset and they want to sue him, and they want to, you know, they want to take him down, although no money was being made back then. And anyway, then the Facebook just starts to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of Napster, although it's not really kind of around right now. But the guy who started Napster got involved.
Sean Parker,
right. He got involved, and they started to go to California and things, and Facebook just kept expanding. And as they were expanding, the company became worth a lot of money, and there's a lot of greed and people fighting and for percentages.
They've been funded by his good friend.
Yeah, and that's kind of a theme important.
Through
yeah.
there also, that in the beginning his friend had $1,000 that he could put into it. No one had any money.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they go to California, that friend starts getting cut out.
Yeah, and when they go to California, his friend Eduardo puts in $18,000. He says, well, let's get you through the summer. And so he was the money of the whole operation. And he was a good guy. You're right on that. He's portrayed as a good guy in here, and he was trusting. You know, he didn't go to California that summer with Zuckerberg because he had an internship somewhere else. So
he was trying to sell ads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is pretty funny, because that's the thing that Mark Zuckerberg in the movie keeps saying, no, I don't want to do that because that means it's not cool. We have to let it see where it's going to go.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Friend's like, yeah, but I put the money in.
Mm-hmm, right. You know? And I need some kind of a payback. And and Eduardo is always saying stuff about his father, although you never see his father in there. That's an interesting thing.
I didn't notice that.
He just kept saying that. He said, you know, because he's doing it because he wants his dad to be impressed with him.
I don't remember him even. Wow, I didn't even pick up on that. Wow,
there was at least two times there. In fact, when he was in the, he said his dad wouldn't even look at him when he was doing the deposition.
Oh, wow, I didn't remember that.
He was describing how he was cut out, and he was embarrassed about the fact that he signed a piece of paper without having his own lawyers read it. But he said, really, I thought these were my lawyers.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that happens is as the company gets bigger, Eduardo is less a part of the company when they're in California. So they have him sign this contract, which says that he's got 34% of the company. But what he doesn't know is that in the contract, it says that his shares can be diluted.
Yeah.
So when they sell a whole bunch more shares to get more capital, his shares go down to something like 0.09%, while Zuckerberg stays at 51%. So he's cut right out of there after signing a document. And Zuckerberg knew what was going on the whole time. So, not good. But it's just like, you know, he is unemotional, Zuckerberg, in the thing. He's just kind of a flat line throughout.
Well,
he's brilliantly played, but he's he isn't shown having the same emotions as everybody else unless things get really uptight.
Well, he actually, to me, he's shown having a lot of emotion, but they're very, very focused on what he thinks is important, and what he thinks is important are things that he can't let go of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can't let go of the fact that the girl dumped him. And when you probably spoiler free, but
yeah,
you know.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
I would say if you've gotten to this point and mm-hmm. even if you think you don't want to watch it, it's really, you should watch it because for one thing, it's all about interaction, social interaction, and how do you behave?
Mm-hmm.
And, you don't have to be Catholic for that. That's a human thing.
Right. Yep.
But it's all about interaction. I was stuck on that one point. For Zuckerberg, though, it's about proving himself. He's got to prove to that girl when she says, you know, which everybody saw in the trailer probably, I want to be clear, I'm not leaving you because you're a geek or whatever. It's because you're an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he never forgets that. And he always keeps trying to reconnect to her. And after what he did, which was hugely awful, what he said about her on the internet, she won't even talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interestingly ironic that at the end of the movie, it's bookmarked by that at the beginning. And at the end, he's told by a girl, no, you're not a jerk, but you just try so hard to be one.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost gotten forgiveness, but although she won't go out with him. And the last thing he's doing is he friends the girl who dumped him on Facebook. He wants to be her friend, and he keeps sitting there refreshing to see if she'll do it. And the girl who, you know, when he approached her the second time, went, I've done this thing called the Facebook. She's like, go play with your video game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, it's become so universal. She's now on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a really neat moment. Yeah. And him sitting there all by himself, isolated, hitting refresh, you know, just mm-hmm. keeps hitting refresh. Yeah.
But yeah, he also remarkable. Was easy. He wanted recognition is what he wanted. So when the Winklevoss twins say that to him, or when that girl says that to him, or other times when people say something that might be slighting, he wants recognition. And he's very jealous of other people maybe getting it for what he's done. And so that's what isolates him. He's already isolated. Just from the way he's interacting with that girl, I think at the beginning, that's the first time you see that character acting normally for him, and you never really see it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's doing three streams of talk at one time and she can hardly keep up, because that's how his brain is, and he just jumps there.
Yeah.
I have a niece like that. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. But she starts talking faster and faster and faster, and you have to just slow down. Remember, it's just us normals here, you know, and she, oh yeah. And so she knows enough to know, and I don't mean it like that, but she, in social situations, she knows that she's not the norm and that she kind of has to always bring it back to center.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a nice girl, sweet girl, love her, but just, you know, she's more like that, which is why she goes to the Colorado School of Mines, where they're more of a group of people who can all understand each other better.
Yeah.
As they say to the parents during the, you know, admission meeting, all the parents were thrilled. Yay, there's other kids like
ours. Oh, that's fun. That's fun. That's how I felt too. I mean, not that I'm smart or anything. I'm just saying that, you know, growing up here in Idaho, it wasn't until I got to college that I started to kind of blossom, or whatever the word is, you know.
Virtual,
I was
high five on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, but again, one of the things that struck me, you know, is the reason that I kept thinking about this movie was all of the people. But it just, you know, Facebook is such a huge part of life right now, especially for my kids, or one of my kids. My youngest one is not on Facebook.
Good.
But yeah, and that's the way it should be. I just kept thinking about, you know, isn't it amazing how this came about? You know, the story is not dissimilar from, you know, Steve Jobs and Wozniak. It's just
Bill
that
Gates,
it's like the roles are reversed. You know, because Zuckerberg is
the one who
knows how to do it. Yeah, he's the Wozniak, but he's the one that's got control, or he's always wanting to maintain control. And Wozniak was perfectly happy giving control to Steve Jobs. You know,
right.
Steve Jobs was the talker. And
Or didn't Bill Gates have somebody like that too?
There's a movie
that
Jesse recommended to me when he heard we were going to do The Social Network. He had a movie called The Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Which is an old TNT movie.
Okay.
And it's got Noah Wyle as Steve Jobs.
Wow,
and who played Bill Gates? Anthony Michael Hall played Bill Gates.
Okay, I don't.
Yeah, he was in Weird Science and.
Again.
Yeah. Old movies.
But I get the geeky element.
yeah, Breakfast Club. He was the geek in Breakfast Club.
Didn't watch it. Sorry.
Really? You never saw Breakfast Club?
How fascinating. I didn't want to give too much away, but I was a little too old for Breakfast Club when it came out. And just never cared to. It's referenced all the time. I feel like I've seen it through all those references.
Yeah, and isn't it amazing how some of that happens?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that came up just the other day. Anyway, yeah. It was a story more about, that movie starts off with Steve Jobs at the very beginning. You know, he's, you know, wearing sandals, long hair, beard. And then it cuts immediately to him announcing in front of the Apple audience that he's made a deal with Bill Gates. And the Apple users are very upset. And then it says, how did we get to hear from there? And then that's what the movie is really about.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So then it starts from the beginning and, you know, how Apple was created. But, yeah, it's not really, you know, that's a good movie too. But I didn't come away with that thinking or feeling how I felt with this movie.
Well, it wasn't Aaron Sorkin and David Fincher, for one thing, and their group of cinematographers and whoever else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Points were being made, like you said. Points were being made about social networking in this movie that's about the creation of a social network.
Uh-huh.
Some of the things that I recall, again, is, you know, they wanted to create the feel of a college campus. Uh-huh. And it's really the partying aspect of the college campus online. So... I'm just saying, I couldn't help but think, you know, parties at college campuses, you know, and I've been to a few of those. They are not places where, you know, the best behavior is going to come out. And this is what my negativity about social networks comes in, because when people start to do things to try to get friends or try to get people to click a like or things like that. Once you start doing things just for that, that's when I start saying, what am I doing? You know?
Well, yeah.
And then I pull right out of it. Because I've been on Facebook, but I do not have an account anymore. And I always get to that point. I got to that point with Google Plus as well, where I'm thinking, I've got to get something on Google Plus. I mean, it's been like 7 days since I've got something on Google Plus. I should put something on there. You know, and when I'm doing stuff just to do that, that's when I start to wonder, what on earth am I doing this for?
Well, it's that, you know? Yeah, it's why are you doing it? Because that's funny, because I do something. The only things I do on Facebook and Google Plus are I will put links to things from my blog.
Mm-hmm.
Or occasionally I'll put links to other things that I think people might like to see. And I don't really do it so that people like or friend me or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
Because I suddenly, a while back when they had it so it was easy to do that, I would go, oh, well, I'll put this up here because I have a lot of friends who are only on Facebook. And they will say, well, what happened? And I'm thinking, I wrote 3 blog posts about this on my blog, but you can't click through to look at that once a day because it's not being delivered to you and you don't understand RSS feeds. Okay, guess what? I'll put a link here on Facebook. And so then I started doing it on Twitter, which I never look at. I mean, I'll put the links up there because I do get some people coming through and I'm like, well, I guess people must care who I know there. And I do it on Google Plus just under the theory that there's people there too. I don't know if I've seen people come through from there, but I find Google Plus a touch more interesting because I have circles, but really the circles I have that I look at are just the 2 main ones, which are fairly small, of people who might comment about stuff there because they feel like it's more private. And,
Google Plus does feel more private, doesn't it? I mean,
it
seems like, you know, especially at the beginning that, The conversations that were happening there were much more interesting than what I would get at Facebook or Twitter. I mean, Twitter seems like, you know, is that really a social network? You know, yeah, Twitter is like, to me, it's a place where famous people can talk to people who are not famous.
Yeah.
You know, that seems, if you want to kind of follow famous people around, Twitter is where you want to go.
Right.
Other than that, is it have a lot of worth? I don't know. As a school board member, I did make a Twitter account not to tweet, but because so many educators are on there and I could just put a list. So I check it like once a day and flip through, and I often find really interesting articles and things that way.
Oh, okay.
Because these people are giving out information that way.
What we use it for actually is very, very rarely, but you know, it's kind of that, what that Egypt Spring or whatever, Arab Spring, whatever it's called, for fast breaking news. Like we had a server go down through some company that we couldn't get a hold of, and the clients whose stuff we had on that server were like going, "What happened to our website?" So Tom suddenly goes, "Oh, wait a minute." So he gets on Twitter and starts going Salt Lake City, which is where the service was. Mm-hmm. And they were like, "Oh, half the power in, you know, half of Salt Lake City is without power right now because something big happened. This is a few years ago."
Right.
It was like, "Oh, okay." So he was able to tell the clients, "There's a problem in Salt Lake City. It's huge." And they went, "Oh, okay." Because he couldn't get through to them because they had no power. So he uses it for very rarely, but for things like that. And I just don't have time. I mean, and this is kind of the thing that the movie's talking about a little, is you have to be discriminating and kind of knowing why you're using these things so you don't get sucked into it. In which I don't see it as being any different that way than a video game or, I don't know, anything that anybody loves to do.
I guess, you know, is there a difference between that and a video game? I mean, yeah, they're both wasting time, but it seems to me that social networks can be more sinister or harmful, damaging to you.
Because there's people involved.
Yeah, because there's other people involved. And again, when you start to do things in order to try to get people to like you, you know, the behavior that's rewarded on a social network.
I sidetracked myself. Yeah. Did you notice at the beginning of the movie? That's the point I wanted to make when you were talking about what you'll do to get people to like you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw this because you didn't have Rose sitting next to you pointing it out. Uh-huh. But the beginning of the movie is probably the most brilliant 5 or 10 minutes you'll ever see in editing and making a really vivid point.
And you're talking about the scene where he's with this girl in the bar?
No. Okay. Where right after he breaks up with the girl,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you see what his impetus is, but he's on the computer and he comes up with the idea. And as he's going, "No, not farm animals, girls, let's compare." Okay. And so he's narrating kind of line by line. How do you get in? You don't use these people because they only have a single page view. I'm not going to go through 500 pages, but these people have 6 per page of pictures. I can hack in and get these pictures and put them up. So he's talking about how you do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's being intercut with all these busfuls of girls going to these frat parties on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And the behavior that is taking place there is horribly shameful. It's the girls getting drunk, they're stripping down, they're playing strip poker, they're dancing, they're doing lewd behavior in front of crowds. And it's the same exact thing that he's setting up with this comparing hot or not,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it's called, where people are voting on that kind of thing.
Right.
And the one That's point when you see that it really affects real people is when one of the girls, it's filtered through campus so quickly that at the frat parties, some people in secluded nooks have computers on and they're voting on the girls, and some girl's standing there and she suddenly looks and goes, "That's my roommate." Yeah. And that's the one point where you go, this affects real people. Well, so does all that frat behavior. And by intercutting it and showing that while he's talking and then going back to what he's doing, they're making a direct comparison of college as a microcosm of the real world.
Mm-hmm.
In what you're doing when you behave like that on Facebook now.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing. You know, Rose kind of went, "Look at how this is a microcosm. Look, they're reflecting it here. It's reflecting the big world." And I went, "Holy moly, you're right.
That's amazing. I'm going to watch that again. That'll be fun to try and watch it in that light. What you're saying kind of reiterates that they're taking like the worst part of the college experience as far as, you know, the worst experiential part.
Mm-hmm.
And putting it on the internet, where I think that, you know, it makes me feel ambivalent. That's again part of why it was so compelling to me to think about, because, you know, here I am in small town Idaho doing a podcast with you in Dallas, and I spend a lot of time on the internet, and the value that I find in the internet, it helps me. You know, I'm a Catholic in a small town in Idaho. This is how I connect to other Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have that many around. And it's been a great thing for me. So it's almost like I'm trying to take the best parts of what my college experience was, and I'm trying to prolong it because what I enjoy is the conversations and, you know, the thinking and the, you know, having a thought or something and posting it on a blog is not social networking, although it is in a way, isn't it?
Well, that's, we started talking about that last night because I thought, what is a social network really? Because Rose said anything where you like or friend someone, because it's that superficial that way. And I thought, well, does that make a blog or a podcast or, you know, because Skype, I remember when Jesse kept going, Skype, it's not social networking. I promise you, it's not social networking. Mm-hmm. And he was right, of course. And I thought, well, is a blog or a podcast social networking? And I don't think it is because it's a more personal, lengthy connection that, for one thing, substantial content is being provided, we hope. but even if it's not substantial content, someone is actually, it's like a newspaper or a TV show.
That's what I like.
You're providing something for consumption. You're not just going, hey, high five, I also like chili on a cold day, you know, which is that superficial, let's be friends, I like orange popsicles too. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. It's interesting that, you know, in my RSS feed reader, you know, I've got Happy Catholic and I've got like the New York Times, you know, so, I mean, they're both in there and it is,
thank you.
Yeah. But it is the same type of a thing. Those are similar things. A Twitter feed is not a similar thing.
No.
You know, although a Twitter feed can be informative, I think your average Twitter feed is, you know, hey, I just landed in New York. And, you know, again, I really think that celebrity is the thing on Twitter. It sure seems to be that, you know, Paris Hilton may have, you know, 2 million followers or whatever. And people love to know that she's landing in France or something, you know. And so I think that if you've got something to sell, like if you're a book author or something like that, I think that, you know, building the Twitter persona is, and that's what it is, isn't it? It's a persona. It's not like it's you, but sometimes, you know, that's something else I think about too. It's like, you know, you, when you're putting stuff out there and you want to be exciting, so people will be interested in following you. I think that's where it gets dangerous.
Interesting because I told you that I went last weekend to this Catholic ministry convention was downtown.
Right.
And it was interesting because the Diocese of Dallas-Fort Worth, both of them, I mean, there's a diocese for each, but they used to have a ministry convention in each place, and they'd have an educators convention in each place, and they'd have something else. And what they did is say, that's ridiculous. We're going to put them both together, have them in one spot, and then we're going to throw in a track for just lay Catholics, regular Catholic people, and invite everybody. And so I was surprised it was so empty, honestly, because once my bulletin finally had something, I was like, "This is, they've had four of these? What?" But it was really interesting. And I went just because I'm connected through Happy Catholic to stuff. And I'm friends, and see, this is where the networking thing is good. I'm friends with Lisa Hendy from Catholic Mom, who I don't read Catholic Mom blogs. I don't have that need or interest. But Lisa Hendy, who I met at the, CNMC, Catholic New Media Convention or something in San Antonio a couple of years ago, she and I just clicked. And she is a sweetheart, I mean, and smart and all this stuff. So she was speaking, John Allen was speaking, you know, the Vatican reporter for NCR. Oh, wow. So
that's neat.
Yeah, he spoke twice. And actually, because of the new media theme, we went to see Lisa Hendy instead of him once. Because Tom went, and he's so interesting to me because he's just curious about everything. And he said, I'm going to go too. And I was like, really? Because I think you're going to be bored. I mean, I'd be glad to have you there. It'd be much more fun. And he's like, no, I just want to see who's there and what it's like, and what they're talking about. And so the minute he saw these two different talks by different people about new media, and it was kind of, the themes were in both cases, technology, tool or trap.
Mm.
And one talk was given by a priest who's kind of looks like the guy who the bishop might be tapping, going, you know about this sort of thing. Here, put together a talk for these people. And the first half of the talk was really good. He was talking about, the second half was fine. It was just he kind of got sucked into, here's the apps I love, and a little too in-depth on that. But it was basically, he started off with, what is the nature of man? And I went, whoa.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. And he had three things that he wanted to say. And one was, God's created in man's image. And what is God? God is three persons, one essence. So God's already a community.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, man is made for community. That's why we enjoy talking to each other, because we're made also to communicate.
Hmm.
Yeah. And he's like, so over time, you know, think of how many thousands and thousands and thousands of years since, or maybe millions. I don't know how long man's been around. I'm very shaky on that. But we've communicated only through talking.
Yeah.
Then a little art, then writing, then the printing press, then TV and radio, now this, the internet and Facebook and all those things. And so we still need to do the same thing. And he goes, so the good thing is it allows us to be more of a community like you and I, or on SFF Audio, or all these people who can connect that never would have connected. And have a good time, legitimately say something that's fun, learn stuff, etc. You know, you get a lot of information you wouldn't have had otherwise. And you can also, there was something else, and I left all my notes somewhere else. But anyway, those are the basics, right?
Right.
And he goes, what are the traps? And then he says, the greatest enemy of man is isolation, because man is created to be a communal creature. And I was like, oh, I didn't think about that. And he said, yes, hell is isolation, complete isolation. And I went, oh, that starts to go back to Dante's Rings. And so Nine Circles of Hell.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I had an Anglican priest tell me one time, he was a friend of mine. Or he has a friend of mine. I just don't have a whole lot of contact with him anymore because he moved away. But he told me, we were having a conversation and about something, I can't even remember what it was, but it was something that I had thought about in isolation. And as I was speaking out loud what I thought that I believed, I realized immediately that it was ridiculous. You know, as it was coming out, I was like, oh, that's kind of not as cool as I thought it would be, you know? And he said, when you think in isolation, you know, without conversation, you often, you don't have anyone to tell you, you know, that you're not making any sense. You can convince yourself of things that honestly don't make sense when it's seen in the light of day. And since then, you know, I took that to heart because I was kind of surprised. I was like, yeah, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all. And since then, that's one of the reasons why I enjoy the read-alongs and everything so much is that it adds this depth, and some of the thoughts, there are thoughts that I wouldn't have had, and there are thoughts that I have that are really not valid, and all that stuff. You know, it's well worth doing.
Oh, yeah. Well, and kind of what that made me think of, too, is when he said man's greatest enemy is isolation. And I thought, oh, yes, because think about, I mean, you'll have holy men who go off and, you know, are specifically keeping themselves on track. But think about the idea of a hermit, you know, the crazy old woman with all her cats. Or my greatest example was my father, who really didn't want to have anything to do with a lot of other people, especially toward the end of his life. And I was just like, whoa, you are not living in a real world a lot of the time. And he just surrounded himself with the stuff he really liked, and everything else he didn't pay any attention to. And anybody from the outside could see how unhealthy that was and how unhappy he was, but he couldn't see it. Cause like you're saying, he wasn't bouncing it off of anyone, you know? And it is that way. A lot of times it's kind of, I hate to mention confession again, but that's part of the point of confession. It's not like God doesn't know what you did. It's that you have to say it out. You have to think about it enough to say it out loud. to someone.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, I mean, of course, God is working through the priest because you need that person to give you feedback or, you know, absolve you of your sins at the very least. But it's that you have to actually articulate, you have to think about what did you do? Where was it wrong? How will you try to amend it later? And say it out loud. And there's something about that, man, that's, it's an experience.
Yeah.
And so the problem with that you see in this movie and that those people were talking about, because Lisa Hendy covered many of the same points. She covered them from the point of view of, as social media people, how do we avoid some of these traps? You know, you have to be aware. You have to not ignore the real world.
It seems to me that, you know, you and I are agreeing that social media is or can be a good thing.
Right.
As long as you don't fall into these traps where you're, for example, you know, I've said it before, you know, trying to behave in a way so that more people will follow you.
And that's one of the things she mentioned, Lisa Hendy mentioned, is how do you present yourself? Are you lying to make yourself look better?
Yeah.
To everybody, or to make yourself look better to you? When do you start to believe it? That's a problem. And we've all seen these kind of things, these horrible stories from like Facebook or, you know, the guy who, and this was on a blog, who drove his plane into the IRS building in Austin.
Yeah.
And Tom went to his blog and looked at the comments and he was horrified. There was not one person counseling wisdom on there. Everybody was egging him on because it was just a little hate-filled session. It sounded to me like a look at hell.
Yeah, yeah.
But I, you know, when I look at my kids and how they use Facebook, because they are the Facebook generation, essentially they're a little younger than that, but one's 24 and one's 21. They use it to keep up with friends who they're not around. Hannah said, well, you know how you talked about how you guys didn't have cell phones and you'd leave your dorm rooms open so everybody walking up and down the hall, you'd know what was going on and you'd gather that way. She goes, that's actually much more isolated than us. She goes, but we keep it to real time. You know, they constantly are getting together. They use Facebook kind of like a bulletin board for who's in Dallas. We're going to go to this movie. And, oh, I saw the picture of your dog or whatever. But then she said she'll see things from a friend who's, you know, in Europe right now. And she'll go, oh, right, they're getting back then.
Yeah.
And Rose the same way. They don't they don't live on there.
Right.
They spend some time on there seeing what's going on, but that's it. And I think that's the healthy look. And like Hannah goes, she goes, and the idea that big corporations are on there, she goes, I guess they have to be there like a billboard so your name's out there. She goes, but yes, I'm much closer to Coke than I used to be. It's a much more of a personal friend and affects all my decisions. And then we just all started laughing at the idea that that's really going to influence people's behavior that much.
Right. Yeah, and that's something that, you know, the whole internet has been mind-boggling to me. You know, like, why, how can Google be worth billions of dollars? You know, I remember thinking, how does that work? And I looked up because I didn't quite understand, how does Facebook make money? I mean, at the end of the movie, it says Facebook is worth $23 billion, you know?
Yeah.
It was like, why? You know, holy cow, you know, because people don't pay to be on Facebook or anything. So I looked it up and I just thought it was interesting. It's just really short. It just says Facebook revenues reached $500 million in 2009, up from $300 million in 2008, according to Fortune editor David Kilpatrick. Where does this come from? Where did the $500 million come from? It says self-service ads, which appear on the right side of the screen on Facebook, accounted for $250 million to $300 million.
Golly.
Can you imagine? And then it says engagement ads, which seek user interaction and sometimes feature user endorsements, brought in $100 million.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and then it said something. Yeah, here's one. As part of a 2007 ad deal, Microsoft sells some ads on Facebook. Its payment for the privilege reached $50 million in 2009.
And just this morning in the Wall Street Journal, I was reading about Ford. They've been advertising and they've run some campaign with some character on there and who looks kind of like an orange Elmo or something, or Kermit, I mean. But they were saying Facebook suddenly went, whoa, you're Ford. We're charging you the same low rate as everyone else. No, you should pay more. And that's when Tom was like, oh, I see. So let's hit the money books, guys. No, you made those rules. You should stick by them.
Yeah, yeah. And they're making enough money as it is. And I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. Just it. You know, Google is. I understand that one a lot.
Well, they have the ads on top and on the side.
But
and,
isn't it interesting that it's all advertising? I mean, it's
not to
just
me because that's my major in college.
Yeah, but it's it's interesting to me though.
The capitalist society.
The capitalist society, right?
For better or worse.
It's okay. It's just fascinating to me that so what Facebook has to offer is a whole bunch of people. You know,
right.
so their whole thing is to make their site as interesting to the people as they can so that people will come. And but once the people are there, they sell them ads.
But isn't that the point of media?
It is.
How many
it is
people
exactly.
are going to see your billboard? Who's going to buy your paper?
Yeah.
I mean,
it is
that's
exactly.
why you get free papers. But and that's why newspapers are so threatened by, online stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to have an online presence. And I don't know that. That's a good thing for some stuff, but I think you should have it fairly limited and then either make people pay or pull them into your publication, which is what the Wall Street Journal does as a capitalist organ, but other papers don't. And that's what they're kind of all trying to sort out. What do we do to keep up?
Right, right.
But they're providing actual content.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, like you say, Facebook is just kind of like the biggest watering hole on the savannah.
Yeah, and it's they're counting on the people to make the content.
Yeah,
so,
it's like
so
a marketplace.
They want, they want the
in a town.
They want people to want to be there. And isn't it interesting? You know, in the movie, Zuckerberg was. It was like he just didn't think it was right. It just wasn't right. This wasn't right. And then he had the idea for relationship status.
Mm-hmm.
And then he puts relationship status on there, and he goes done.
Yeah, that was it. That's what we needed.
They were waiting for him to, put it online, and he's like, now it's done.
Now we're done. Finished.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I thought was interesting, too, is by using these fairly few characters, they represented a wide range of human behavior.
Mm-hmm.
You had Mark Zuckerberg, who's, the brilliant, dysfunctional creator who is desperately trying to connect with people in the ways that he knows. And we all know people like that to a greater or lesser degree. You have the Winklevoss twins who what's right and they want to win. You notice it isn't until they lose the Olympic trial or the Olympic. Yeah, I guess it's an Olympic trial by however many seconds that suddenly they see the news that they're on. Facebook is on two continents and they're like, whoa, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Even the good ones, the good twin who's always been like, let's behave like gentlemen. They go back and we were looking at what the head of Harvard, I guess, said, which was, well, you lost. Go invent something else.
Yeah.
And they can't let go because they want to win. You've got Eduardo, who's actually, he's the conscience of the movie, but he's also, as we were saying, the fairly normal one who he doesn't even know how to update his Facebook status.
Yeah, that was a nice scene there.
Which was brilliant.
Yeah, his girlfriend,
and
yep.
You have Sean Parker, who... I don't know what that guy's like, but this is the movie also where I went, Justin Timberlake really can act. Wow. he's a complete parasite. He made it once with Napster, which was about stealing, basically, and trying to rewrite the rules. He lives from girl to girl. And if you notice, until Eduardo's kind of pushed out of the scene, Mark Zuckerberg is fascinated by him because he's cool. He's achieved a notoriety and can write his own rules according to the computer geek world.
Mm-hmm.
And every time Sean Parker meets, he's constantly gauging everybody's conversation and steering it towards what's going to make Mark interested. And when Eduardo's like in New York, he's constantly ending every conversation in the club.
Mm-hmm.
He's this and this and this to make himself look good. And then he comes back to, and where's Eduardo? Why isn't Eduardo here? Where's Eduardo? Because he's trying to get in, and he does.
Yep.
And starts manipulating him. And he's telling stories about a girl in high school because he knows that Mark Zuckerberg is fueled by this in this movie anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in the same conversation, Mark Zuckerberg's picked up on that. And he's like, well, what about that girl? Do you ever talk to her still? Because he really, that's what he's trying to do is connect. And he goes, what girl? He's forgotten her. He made her up. Never. You've got all these basic kinds of personalities and how Do they either use this technology or how does it affect them? And some of the most affecting scenes were between Eduardo and Mark Zuckerberg in the deposition, and they never even talked to each other, really. Mm-hmm. It was just looks, right, or little gestures of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, another thing that struck me, too, is, you know, Zuckerberg, you know, he just had this idea, you know, and he did it. Now he's super rich, you know, but, you know, and some people, you know, put him in the class with, you know, the major internet moguls, you know, like Google and that. But it's really just such a simple idea that he had, you know.
Yeah, it was the right idea at the right time.
It was the right idea at the right time. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't know what I'm trying to say with that thought, but it's something that occurred to me.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, are we talking about Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg in the same paragraph? You know, they seem to be completely different types.
Mark Zuckerberg hasn't had a long enough run. Steve Jobs had continual. Here's what everybody forgets, or maybe they don't. But what I remember as a Mac user for so long, because 95% of the Macs sold for so long were sold for graphic design.
Yeah.
And they were only 5% of the total computers ever
and
sold.
So do you
until
use
recently.
Macs, you use Macs at your office now?
Yeah, although we tend to use PCs more because web coding, which is what a lot of advertising has gone to, and we do websites. And if anybody wants, I'll give you the link. But speaking of advertising, but that's mostly PC-based.
You should. Yeah.
But glyphnet.com, glyphnet.com.
There you go.
But I'll put a link on there if anybody's interested. But we do regular layout. In fact, I'm laying out a huge catalog at the moment that we do every year. And that still, there's nothing like the Mac for that. But the PC stuff has caught up to it. But it was always, you know, streets ahead, as Pierce on Community would say, for the Mac.
Yeah.
And we were so bemused, actually, when the iPod came out. Because suddenly that thing that no one could understand why we would even buy it, and why don't you have a Dell or an HP or whatever, they suddenly were like, you use Macs? I want to get a Mac. They do so well with the iPod that I really – and we were just like – that's all it took? My goodness, this is interesting. Yeah. So we watched Steve Jobs struggle and struggle and struggle for so many years and just keep going. We watched him get kicked out. We watched him come back. And this doesn't mean we think he was, you know, a god or anything. We did think he was a fascinating personality to watch because he was so driven to do what he did.
Yeah.
And so on target. But we were well aware of his, what was it called, a reality distortion bubble that was around him, which is why he could make such missteps, because he was so charismatic, evidently. He could just talk. They'd go, don't listen to him much. You know, it's what they'd say to people going into meetings with him. Okay, but remember these 3 points. Nothing else. Don't let these go.
Wow.
Because he'll just take you, sweep you away with him.
Yeah.
See, and that's Mark Zuckerberg hasn't got that track record yet. And the one track record I can see other than developing Facebook is that Google, based on their one Russian co-founder guy, pulled out of China based on the censorship.
Yeah.
And Mark Zuckerberg's going, well, those are their laws, and trying to get in as hard as he can. And I'm like, to me, I look at ethics.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to show me, ethics.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I'm not saying Google's the best. I'm just saying.
Yeah, when you said, you know, the name of that panel was, you know, Tool or Trap. Another thing that makes me think of is technology in general. Because for a long time, it really kind of was a trap. You know, when you were using it, it's almost as if, you know, you had to spend a lot of time dealing with the devices and dealing with the computer. It would be a significant amount of time for you to deal with your word processor as to write whatever you were writing.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that what Steve Jobs did in the last probably 8 years is he's led the way in making devices that are finally more useful than they are a pain in the butt. I mean, like the iPods and the iPhones and the Macs and everything, and how they work together. I mean, for me to be able to now have a device where I can take a note on my phone and it'll show up on my PC and my Mac and, you know, whatever other device that I have. If you have
an iPad or whatever. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Because, I mean, the technology has gotten to the point now where it's totally useful. And I love that. And I think that's what Steve Jobs gave us all.
Well, and I think eventually it'll settle down, just in the same way that, you know, Gutenberg invented the press, but that didn't mean books and newspapers were everywhere instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But it just travels so much faster. And I think that's the danger. Everything's so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mind quick. I like quick. But that was the other point that that priest made in his talk was, the thing we have to watch out for is that we're reacting to things without giving ourselves time to reflect. And we're kind of meant and made in a way that we have to reflect on stuff. It's kind of like you saying, you know, by talking on the read-alongs or our conversations here, it allows us to kind of reflect more fully. And I have to also have time after a movie for a day or two. I have to think about it and maybe jot some notes down or talk to people about it. So I kind of have solidified what my conclusions are.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, you know, people are going, well, this happened. Why didn't so-and-so say something? Why hasn't a big decision been made? Why hasn't the president done this? Why hasn't the Vatican said that? And I know that in John Allen's talk, he was talking about the Pope's PR problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was pointing out three big PR problems and one that went right. And he was pointing out that in every case where it went wrong, it took 15 days for the Vatican to respond to the news bites that the media picked up.
And is that because they're not paying attention? It's like, you know, they do this and then they go back to what they're doing, or
it's kind of two reasons. One is that even though anybody else could have told you the Pope going to Africa was going to bring up a press question about condom use and AIDS, the Vatican didn't seem to think that about it in terms of, you know, we know this question's coming up. Let's make a talk about it. Let's find out who else is on board, which it turns out is practically everyone secular and religious in Africa because of the culture and all these other things. Mm-hmm. Let's have a talk. Let's have some of those people there. Instead, they just ignore it altogether because they just don't think about it. They're focused on what they want to do instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Pope, in a very thoughtful fashion, answers a question that one of the press pops off on the Pope plane, and one half sentence gets picked up and broadcast around the news, and that defines the entire trip the rest of the time.
Wow.
And he said, never has he seen such a disconnect between what the media represented and what actually happened, which was a fantastic trip full of goodwill that built a lot of bridges and all this stuff. And he goes, but you look at the media and they're like, oh, once again, they're all over sex, those Catholics, you know.
Mm.
They don't care about the people with AIDS, blah, blah, blah.
Wow, yep.
And so he was saying part of it is they're not stopping to think and predict properly or even use Google properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other part is that what they do is to react, they have to get together several people. They have to get together the guy who's in charge of the press. They have to get together the guy who's in charge of the Congregation for Divine Faith or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's like, here's what our policy is. They have to get together two or three other people. So by the time they get those people together and talk about it so they can come up with a reasoned thing that has all the documentation and they've thought it through and they say it in the right way, which wouldn't have used to have been a big deal, it's gone. It's solid. It's news the way the New York Times said it or whoever.
Wow.
And he goes, they need to have like somebody in between or something in between where they're both looking at what are the questions that are going to come up, and second, we need to have some quick little response before we give our bigger reasoned response.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah, and they just, you know, they're a 2,000-year-old institution, and as he pointed out, you need the PR response, but should that always be the way that you frame everything? And he goes, no, and that's the other thing the world can't understand is, you're also concerned with other things besides that.
Right, right.
So they're just kind of not set up. And he goes, probably there needs to be a restructuring of the Curia, all those little offices that don't connect well, and there's infighting sometimes. And sometimes it's just that, you know, their medieval office is set up so long ago. And that was one of the things that before he was Pope, Cardinal Ratzinger, as he was then, had said that really, really needed to be done. And he said once he got elected, I guess is what it is, that everybody kind of watched thinking this is something he was going to do. And what his personal opinion was is that, you know, he was elected at what, 75 or something? And he only has so much energy to devote, and he's devoting it all. So he had to kind of look and say, what is my big priority? And he says, he actually says that he went off for a little while by himself as much as he could and started praying about, why did you want me here? I'm so old. What can I do? What do you want me to do? Why me? There were a lot of other people. And his decision seems to be that it was to teach. And if you look at his, you know, Wednesday general audiences, those series of homilies that have been turned into, you know, a series on the saints, a series like the fathers, on the apostles, the Holy Father, the fathers of the church, and all the talks he's given lately, his encyclicals, they are all about catechesis, which is to say for non-Catholics, teaching. And it's sorely needed. And so he seems to feel like, you know what, they've muddled along this long. They'll hit some and miss some. They'll do the best they can, and somebody else coming along will fix that other stuff. Which may not be a bad idea. You kind of let some of it settle down. But Lisa Hendy went to that blog. I'm sorry to just hijack it again. But no, Lisa Hendy went to that Vatican bloggers conference. She was one of the ones who won the lottery. And she said that one of the things the Vatican people said in that was that, of course, the Pope is not the one on Twitter or Facebook. That's, you know, his media office. But she said he is keenly aware of all the developments. And he'll, like, you know, take that into account when he's, you know, thinking or responding or whatever to various people, I guess, within his group. He knows how it works. So that's why his World Communication Day talks, I was like, I need to go back and read some of these, because everybody was quoting those. And I do want to say, of course, we all know this, but as much as I love the internet, going to that ministry conference thing, I was really surprised, again, by all the things I couldn't predict that happen when you're in conversation with people or running into people you never would have expected, or the thoughts and conversations that you have later based on what you saw there. It's those, it made me understand more why you and Jesse would go to science fiction conventions. I don't love science fiction enough to care about going to one of those conventions, but I might if I did and heard some of the talks and things. You start to think that our podcast or the blogs or the things I read can replace that human interaction. And you have to kind of just on faith step out and go, no, I better face to face meet people, like at that, or like in my helping with RCIA. I thought I knew so much about the faith until I started getting asked questions by a bunch of Protestants who might want to join the church.
Isn't that the way, you know? It's I always learned more by trying to explain things to other people.
And it's humbling because it shows you what you do and don't know. It shows you your strengths and weaknesses. And it's easy for yourself to construct, not when knowing it at all, a false persona, because you and I've talked, but I've taken notes and we're polite conversation. We've kind of maybe sent a couple emails about here's a couple points I'm interested in. So we're kind of prepared.
You're right on the conventions. Jesse and I, in fact, you know, people may not be aware that I've never met you in person. And I hadn't met Jesse in person for a long time, but we met in LA for a World Science Fiction Convention.
Oh, how fun.
And that was the first time I had met him in person.
And it's so different, isn't it?
It is a lot different. And that convention was so fun that, you know, that's like a peak experience. You know, we've been doing that website together since 2003, but the peak experience was the convention. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I say that that is one of the peak experiences.
When did you go to that? What
2007.
Year? Okay, so fairly recently.
Yeah, fairly recently.
Relatively.
But yeah. But it was great fun. Yeah, and it was different.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It's not a replacement.
Yeah.
It's a way to connect, but it's not a replacement.
No, and that's, yeah, I first experienced that after doing that retreat where we would write mm-hmm. emails to each other all the time, this whole group.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you get to know each other through those things in a deeper way because it's more reflective and gives time for give and take.
Yeah.
And I also express myself better in writing a lot of times than real person.
Uh-huh.
But, and even in this, you know, I'm kind of like, oh, if we ever got to meet and, you know, it would be interesting just to see where things go because it's the yeah. whole world, not one directed topic.
Right. Yeah, you're right. And it does seem, it adds, for some, you know, it just adds a depth. You know, when you meet somebody in mm-hmm. person, it becomes different from then on.
Yeah, you find out, and also you find out they're very different people. You suddenly go, I thought I knew you, but wow, it's kind of nerve-wracking in a way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Not in a necessarily a bad way. It can be exciting and fun and everything else, but you suddenly go, whoa, what?
You bet.
You know?
Yeah.
This is different.
That's great.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, and that's kind of the point the movie makes is, and not, I don't, I guess it seemed like they were picking on Mark Zuckerberg, but he was in the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You had to have a character like him. And he's the one who never understood how to connect with anyone. And really, the person he really connected with most was Sean Parker, who betrayed him. He didn't know how to identify that Eduardo was the solid rock who'd really been his friend.
Yeah, it was like a superficial connection made with Sean Parker that he mm-hmm. thought was significant,
mm-hmm.
which again follows into the, you know, the commentary on social networking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here you start to consider this to be a significant connection. But it really isn't, you know, it really isn't. And then all of a sudden you find out that it isn't or
yeah,
that's what
because
he did.
Yeah. Sean, yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that's what he found out in the film
right.
is that it wasn't a solid connection and
well,
you know, superficial.
And Sean Parker actually was a face-to-face connection now that I think about it, but it was, I guess in that sense, it's that anybody can fool you even in person.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to look for more. And Mark Zuckerberg never left his isolation enough to do that.
Yeah. That's
And he realizes that, you know, he realizes that twice. Once is in the depositions. And the other time, though, the real time is when he looks at those business cards he'd had made and throws them away.
Yeah.
And he actually stands up a little bit to Sean Parker.
Mm-hmm.
And did you love the thing at the frat party at the end? And did you notice it's bracketed by frat parties? It always comes back to college. It always uh-huh. comes back to what disappointed you. And what you find out is that Sean Parker was also a giant nerd because he has his inhaler. He uh-huh. can't do cocaine. You know, although he's got the party boy image,
mm-hmm.
he's a huge nerd.
Right,
and can't
right.
handle a real life situation. That's where his paranoia stems from. It's always someone else's fault. It's never his fault.
Yeah, gotcha.
And,
yeah, that's for sure.
You know, and so I guess the problem is that tool or trap, because fire was the new technology once. Are you going to burn someone's house down or are you going to cook them dinner?
Yeah, and that's a good point too. Yeah, just what use it the right way and it's all great.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's pretty much it. Use it the wrong way and it'll burn you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent point.
It's funny to think of fire as being a technology, but it was once. It's like,
it was.
Well, how did you guys get that?
I fire.
You can control it? Whoa.
Yeah, what would Steve Jobs have done with fire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
we need to make this easy to use.
Mm-hmm. Seems like we had... I guess, is that everything? Or
yeah.
Do you have other points?
Nope. I've got it. That's it. How about yourself?
Oh, yeah, no, that was it
okay.
for me. I was thinking of, Jeff's comments on...
oh, that's right. Yeah.
What was it?
It was on Something Wicked This Way Comes.
That's it.
Yeah.
And
he said, he said a lot of cool things.
Yeah, and I thought I printed them out. Wait a minute.
Let's see. I've got it here in front of me.
Okay, good.
Not sure which part you're thinking of, but he has a lot of excellent stuff to say. It's a first comment on the...
I think it was about the father.
On the father. Okay, he said, I really love the treatment of Charles Holloway. Yeah. There's quite a dearth of heroic fathers in fiction and in the movies. Fathers are rarely given much credit and are usually a doofus compared to the mother. Charles Holloway comes across as wounded with his own worries, but he's not totally self-absorbed. There's a genuine love of his son that is so evident. Plus, when the time comes, he is able to resist the temptations related to his age and to defeat evil in such a magnificent way. The half moon that is really a smile on the bullet is such a master stroke. And of course, the same goes with the mirror maze and the other battles. And that was a great point.
And I think you mentioned the father some, but mm-hmm. I don't think I thought about it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And that is refreshing.
And he is right. Yeah, that is. Yeah. It is refreshing. I did like that character a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was in Something Wicked This Way Comes by Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, and he said a lot more really great things. Yeah. We obviously hit a chord, and I was so glad that he responded. That was really great.
Yeah, I love it. Yep, fantastic.
Yeah, and actually, if anybody ever wanted to do, I guess if they wanted to do an audio response, you could send us the...
Oh, sure, yeah.
...the file, and we'd just include it.
We would do that. Mm-hmm.
We don't have a call-in thing, but I don't think those things really work with podcasts. I hear people trying to do them, and they're always like, mm-hmm. Well, we'll tell it to you later, you know?
Yeah, they can just email us an MP3 file.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We'd be happy to.
Well, and I do want to say, and we all know that, speaking of social networking, we all know that networking can be used for good on the internet. For instance, Rose and Tom went to LA to kind of get the lay of the land because, as a film major, she's going to move out there probably after the beginning of the year
mm-hmm.
to start trying to make a living. And it was because of our blogs, or, you know, Will Duquette's blog. And my blog that he and I ever connected, and he saw me mention something and said, hey, you know, I live out here. I have mm-hmm. friends in the business. And he very kindly sent an email, and his friend, who it turns out is a Catholic friend from his church, is the head editor of Conan O'Brien's show.
Oh, how neat.
And when Rose wrote to him, he told her later that he goes, you know, I get these things and I never respond, but this time I thought I should start giving back. And so he said, Friday, we're not shooting. Come and have lunch at the studio. I'll show you around. I don't know if I have any tips, but I'll give them to you. And I don't know that anything that you could say, oh, and then this happened, came from it. But mm-hmm. it was really kind of him to do that. And it was nice for her to get to talk to him and see the studio, and actually for them to even drive around that area, which they'd been trying in vain to see where all the studios were. Well, it turns out they were all there in Burbank. So they drove around and went, oh, look at all these little production companies. This mm-hmm. is where I can apply for things. So, it was a really positive way to use it as a tool
mm-hmm.
to further, you know, connections. And so Tom and Rose have met Will and his family. I never have.
Well, that's exciting.
I'm going to get out there.
That's neat. I can't wait to do one of Rose's movies on Good Story.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
I'll have to send you a, I'm not sure if they've got it posted somewhere. There's a little independent film that a directing / producing college mate of hers did, that she did the editing and stuff for, that mm-hmm. I thought was actually very good, in a little experimental story kind of way. I'll have to send it to you.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. Or put the link up if they have one.
Excellent.
I'll find out.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds great. All right. So next we've got in a couple of weeks, we're going to do Way Station by Clifford D. Simak.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're into December. And December 1st, we're going to do Tokyo Godfathers, anime.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. Really genuinely looking forward to that. That'll be fun.
Yeah. And that might be the last movie that guy ever did. And mm-hmm. it's interesting because he was kind of his movies are kind of trippy to watch usually. I've watched one other and they just flip around like crazy. And this one's not that way. It's kind of different for him.
Well, neat.
Yeah. Right. And then Hogfather.
Yes.
By Terry Pratchett.
Hogfather by Terry Pratchett. That'll be great. Yep.
He's always amusing. And then we'll take a break for mm-hmm. a couple weeks.
For the holidays. After that.
I mean, we won't do anything for about a month, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's right. It looks like we'll be back on January the 12th.
Yeah, and so, you'll pick a movie
at
that point.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it. You betcha. Well, sounds fun. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
And,
get out there and do some social networking.
Keep the social networking as a tool and make a real life connection you wouldn't have made somehow.
There you go.
That's your goal.
That's your goal, right. Excellent. Well, thanks
bye,
a
everyone.
Bunch. Bye-bye.
Thank you.